Hey everyone, welcome to the Mass Construction Show with today's guest, Brian Tocci, Senior Project Engineer at Manufacton. I'm your host, Joe Kelly, and this is a podcast about all things construction in Massachusetts and beyond. This episode is not really an episode. It is the audio from a Google Meets conversation that Brian and I were having. I met Brian when he was a student at Wentworth helping out with their mechanical engineering group. And Brian reached out. We were kind of chatting. He was interested in prefabrication, seeing the company that he works for, Manufacton, is really heavy in that space. And although I would not use Manufacton because I am not a contractor and I'm not doing prefabrication, I was still interested in what Brian's, the company that he's now working for, what their software does based off of my interest in prefabrication. So I said, hey, Brian, you know, would you give me a demo and maybe we could chat a little bit about what's going on? And Brian obliged. We had a call. I recorded it just so I could kind of go back, but I thought there was a lot of good nuggets in here. It ended up being a really long call. We talked about prefabrication, what interesting things Brian's seeing for the clients he's working with, what's happening at Manufacton, as well as we had a foray into, you know, job decisions that we make, or career decisions, probably better said. And I think you'll enjoy that. That's really probably in the last half hour of the show. So if you want to fast forward right to that, I don't have a minute mark. Maybe I can drop that in the show notes. Enjoy the show. Before we even do Manufacton, we talked a little bit about it, I think, on the phone. But what was the decision to go to technology platform versus... I mean, get a CM degree and then, like, it's already, like, some people go to a sub and that's kind of like, okay, it's still in the same family, but to go to the tech side is kind of completely different.
Yeah.
What was the thought?
So I'd spoken with them when I was kind of getting out of school. It was, and I felt like I needed more field experience after being in the field for just under a couple years. I felt that I did not enough to validate myself, but I got kind of the part of the experience that I was looking for and kind of the mindset and fair understanding of what it was, and not obviously a ton of in-depth on super like a wide range of specific things, but I felt like I had a better understanding of what it takes and the skills needed to perform in the field. And I felt kind of less, I guess, just less insecure about it. So after doing that, it was more thinking about the future. And after, there was a certain amount of pressure, like you said, that most people go through the school and, all right, it's either I want to be a project manager or superintendent. So I think it took me a little while to kind of get over that, but being able to see the value in going with a software company that's still very involved in the industry and kind of the future of the industry. And after kind of understanding more of the offsite construction, the idea behind it, the how much you can get out of it too, that I wasn't necessarily missing out on information by not being in the field, that it was kind of opening some doors instead of just closing others. I think it took me a little while to understand, but once I did that, I think there's for a lot longer down the road, I hope there's a little more upside than the traditional construction route. And it was also kind of for myself breaking out of that mold of, all right, you went to school for 4 years, like, and now it's time to be superintendent. It's like that's awesome. It was a lot of fun. And I could end up back there at some point. I wouldn't necessarily be disappointed about it, but it was cool to kind of break out of that mold and a little bit of pressure kind of direction that people are trying to steer you in.
But no, it's funny. I think you going for to spend some time as a super really makes sense. And you're right. It doesn't need to be 20 years. It doesn't even need to be 10, right? But I was talking to somebody about schedule and we were discussing the fact that, yeah, you can tell somebody how to build a schedule. If they don't know how to build a building, then there's no way to teach that, right? You couldn't, I know how to make a schedule, but I couldn't give you a schedule on how to build a car. I don't know how to build a car, right? So I think it was smart that you at least spent some time out there.
It was important for me to do that. And I'm glad that I did it. I think there's definitely there's so much to learn by being in the field, and I think it's the best place for anybody to start. But I think I had enough of just kind of the big concepts kind of not understood, but I feel like there's no way to say it without sounding like cocky. Like,
yeah.
And I know like if I went back there, I get humbled every day, and I would then too, but I have enough understanding where I can leverage that in the new, in the kind of the new position, enough to understand some of what I'd be taking that enough experience and being able to leverage that, I guess, with new concepts and new people. So I think that's, once I felt comfortable with that, that kind of opened the door for me.
I know you did some time T.G. Gallagher. What did you do the 2 years post-school? Was that Gallagher or was that?
That was with JMA.
JMA. Okay, actually, you know what? I knew that. You're right, now that you say it. Good place to learn.
Yeah, great place to learn. It's a, that's a really cool company. I'm glad that I even got in the door.
Who are you under as a super?
Brian Gaw.
I know of him. I don't know him that well. And then what did you, what do they do? They'll do field engineer, right?
Yeah. So I was as much of a field engineer as you could be. So doing layout on core walls, hanging off the wall, or shooting points with the total station, or running elevators, or a little bit of everything.
Awesome. And you
so
had,
was a good, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so you had your exposure to manufacturing, like, I don't know why I can't say it, manufacturing, as a co-op, and you just stayed in touch with them?
Yeah, I thought it was a, it was kind of cool. It was just a whole different perspective on construction that I was used to. So I went, my co-op was at T.G. Gallagher's fab shop, and part, a big part of that was having them be one of the early adopters of manufacturing. So it was getting their fab shop set up with it and teaching their super, their field, field foreman, or sorry, shop foreman, and shop personnel kind of how to use it and how to leverage it. So that was a big part of what I did. And, the people were really cool. I worked a lot with Roggy, the CEO, and Merle, and with them, like week in, week out, to help, kind of understand and implement it into T.G. Gallagher stuff. And I thought that the concept was really cool. Just trying to build and a lot of stuff off site, and that whole idea was new to me because I didn't think it was something that came up a lot in school. So it was kind of something that was new, that was cool, and they're an awesome awesome bunch of guys, and it was fun to kind of be a part of something when they were pretty early too. So it was fun for me to follow how they were doing and how they were growing, and it worked out.
Yeah, like just folks that I have followed, like Pillars, and which is Pillar Technologies, which is a Wentworth company, you know, that has been getting some VC funding, and you know, they really fit into that IoT startup kind of thing. And just to watch them, I just find that fascinating to see what it's like, whether they succeed or fail, or any of these companies succeed or fail. It's so interesting to me to see them do an undertaking. You know, I mean, I started my own business, but I'm not trying to become multi-million, multi-billion. I'm not trying to like manufacture. I'm not, it's just another level when you're trying to create a company that can scale across the world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun too, but like they were, it was what, like 5 or 6 years ago now. So it was, they were still fairly early on in their process. There's been ton of updates in between and growth, but it was cool to have enough of a part where you felt like you not made a difference, but you had some sort of impact and were able to do that. So you were kind of, felt like I was on their team a little bit, and you were kind of motivated like that, like instead of just being interested in following it, that you're also kind of rooting for it. So that was like, that was, and knowing the guys and maintaining the contact and being friends with them as well, you just extra motivated to kind of follow it and hope for the success.
Yeah. I mean, and you even talked about it a little bit where you're saying you just have no idea what it's like, how busy and how intense it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I got involved with Pillar just through Wentworth. It was a woman that worked for a local general contractor who was on, I don't know if she was a trustee or whatever the right word is at Wentworth, but she was pretty senior from an involvement standpoint. So she knew of Pillar, and she just reached out and said, you know, hey, you know, you might be able to help these guys. They're Wentworth. Their technology is for construction companies. Maybe you can help them. And then we became good friends. And like, it's just funny, like how hard they're working. And at some times when they're waiting for the next round of funding, like when Alex came back to Boston, like he's literally sleeping on my sofa because he's trying to save money and not spend it at a hotel. You know, it's just, you know, and then 3 weeks later, they're getting around. That's, you know, $2.5 or $2.8 million new thing of cash, right? You know, and that,
yeah, that's awesome.
It's just it's an exciting thing to be part of, so I can see why you were drawn to it on a number of levels. But was some of it you were just saying, okay, this is the way you see the industry going, so
why not get on board now? Was that kind of?
That would definitely be a part of it. Yeah, that's kind of, there's certain people that, it's kind of a weird spot in my career to try to get involved with that. So, but also kind of like, why not me? Like, who knows, in a few years, I could be hopefully an expert on offsite construction, or at least try to work towards that. If it's something that's, I could try to be a great superintendent, or this is something that I could hopefully try to get ahead of. And there's a whole different type of opportunity there. The mystery of it, which was concerning at first and then kind of fun, was with a superintendent, there's kind of a pretty straightforward path, or I guess kind of linear path. You can only venture so far off of it with this.
Field engineer, kind of, assistant superintendent.
Yeah. There's none of that. So it's a little bit weird to think about, but there's no direct path or kind of line to follow. So I thought that was a little getting out of my comfort zone at first, but then also kind of motivating. Like, who knows? Like, this opens a lot of doors as well. So,
yeah. I think you have to have the right personality for that, though, right? Because some people, that is just too stress inducing. The unknown is really off putting for some people. I know myself, being someone that does not like the consistency. If I have too much consistency, I get bored. So I kind of like saying, yeah, I don't really know what's going to happen on Monday, right?
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, I think part of that was opening myself up to not to being like that, where I always kind of thought, especially with Wentworth's very focused, like, all right, this is like either field or PM, and you just kind of go up from there. And this was kind of my, almost like a message to myself too, that there is other stuff and you're capable of kind of jumping out of the comfort zone and making the leap.
Yeah. Just, you know, pattern interrupt or whatever, just break that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that was a big part of it for me too, as goofy as that sounds.
Yeah. Have you guys started doing any, I hate the phrase, but I don't know of a better one, but where you talk about becoming like an expert in offsite construction, have you guys done any like kind of like thought leadership writing or videos and things like that? Or have you thought about it?
On our platform or on others, I guess?
Both, whether, you know, you're going on Medium or whether it's just social media or a blog.
Our senior staff do a lot of that. We have a blog that we've been pretty busy, so I don't think it's been super active lately, but our VP of industry solution, he just did a couple of seminars on like MEP Force. I can pull that up if you want.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a note that, so it's just on the blog is just a
it's just on our website. If you go to, it's, I think it's just blog.manufacton.com. But if you go to our website and you go to about, you can see our leadership team there. It's a lot of Ragi Iyengar, he's our CEO. He's done like the a couple of positions on the Society for Construction Solutions. CRO Bob Willis, he just did a joint webinar with FMI, and then Jason Barber, the VP Industry Solutions and Strategy, he just did a couple of sessions at MEP for us. He did another seminar with maybe it was Bob Willis that did TG Gallagher and FMI.
I'm looking at that right now. I saw Sean Gerton. Is it Sean Gerton?
Jason, yeah, Sean.
Rob Britton.
Yeah, that was the MEP Force one. And then we did kind of I think it was FMI that set up the webinar, but they did one with, it's on our social, it should be on some of our social from a while back, a month maybe, if that. It was Jay Snyder from FMI and then Brian Potter from TG Gallagher that did it too.
Oh, Brian. Yeah, Brian and Sean are both great. Yeah.
Yeah, they're awesome to work with. So it's nice to continue that relationship with them too.
Yeah, it must be funny, right? You're like, wait a minute, you and my co-op, right?
Yeah.
I have like a sense of what you guys do, but what do you do? And wherever it's right to just show me on the screen, like I'm down with that.
We would take somebody's offsite supply chain and just kind of optimize that or help them start it up through kind of what we do and what we track and help manage. We track every, like your prefab process from start to finish. It can start in a few different spots. We have a plugin to Revit where you can just basically select an item in Revit, or you can do a whole model at once and break it up into different production orders. And as it goes along, it highlights the model in terms of what stage certain items are at and certain fab and stuff like that.
So let's say I was going to do like a plumbing rack for a bathroom. You would say you could break out like the strut, the traps, all the different components that would go into it and within the model and get them tracked?
If you wanted to do, it's kind of all of that. So if you wanted to do like a plumbing rack, is that what you said?
Yeah.
So we would, our production order would be like that plumbing rack, and you would break that up into different, we can make a separate material order for that, and that can be sent to your vendors, and we can track pretty much every man hour that's spent on it, how it's detailed, all that stuff. So it's such a wide range of stuff. It's hard for me to describe it like super focused, but like I can start when you were speaking to, is it Bill Weber of, so he was talking about like, Gaston. So he's talking about like kits and stuff like that. We can start off with like prefab packages. So if you have a ton of bathrooms and you want to figure out how to break them up, you can make a kind of a theoretical order. We call it a prefab package, and you can then split it up into production orders how you want. Or if there's like a group of stuff that you want to end up like kitting together, a ton of different assemblies, we can make this like kitting card, and then you can make a custom add all your assemblies, or we can add all this. This is just electrical stuff, but you can add in a couple different types of assemblies.
Here's where Brian started demoing the product. If you check out the show notes, you'll find a link to see the video of how the software works. And we'll pick up with me recapping what Brian went through in the demo.
All right. So I want to redo that. I'm going to say it one more time.
So sure.
Prefab Planner is going to be putting the production runs together loosely. These are the runs we're going to have, or these are the kits we're going to have.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. And then... and you're managing it through the prefab planner. Then you have the production manager. You start to detail and get all the, really drill into all the details of it and refine it, schedule the manufacturing of it, quality assurance component, if you have a separate one or if it's happening during the process, and then delivery of the product to site.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
And then concurrently, you have two other things. One where you're procuring materials, the material manager, that's making sure based off of all the detailing you just did, you can order all the materials you need. And then there's the inventory manager that is managing what you have in the shop that you just kind of constantly need.
Yep.
And then you've got the dashboard, which is supply chain manager, looking at everything that's going on with the ability to kind of zoom in on particular things if you want.
Yeah, that's it. That's pretty good.
Sorry.
I take it. I don't take it for granted, but I overlook a lot of things just because I'm, especially just even in the software, I get sucked into it or kind of I get on a very granular level with it. So.
Yeah, I mean, and what I just did is probably a tremendous disservice to your product by making it completely simple, right?
Well, perfect, because that plays off of me jumping around and going all over the place and brings it home. So I think that's great.
Okay, so what do you think is happening? Are you starting to see more and more? Would you say you're predominantly working with subcontractors or GCs?
I would say right now it's predominantly modular builders and subcontractors.
And I would assume regionally it could be different, right? There might be more self-performed GC somewhere in other parts. Like up here, we're pretty non-self-perform.
Yeah, I would totally agree. Yeah. So if you had a GC that wanted to get into the self-performing or self-fabricating and self-performing, but like in a modular style, then yes.
Okay. And then, but like you said, predominantly modular and subcontractors. And now I think the question I have is, are you seeing more and more subcontractors adopting prefabrication? Or is it still slow from an adoption? Not necessarily people using your technology, but just from an adoption standpoint of subs.
Yes, I would think there's more now than previously. And I think once people start to get over the hump of recovering from COVID, where their processes have found you found a way to kind of get everything back up and running, and then you have time to think, like, because I'm sure that's everybody's focus now, but I think it's going to be a pretty big boom coming up where it's like, all right, let's, like, we already know there's some benefit to prefab, but now we know it's more important to keeping our process going through tough times and keeping stuff in a more isolated position.
Also, I think maybe,
what time frame are you kind of looking at?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe a better question is, prior to COVID, were you seeing an acceleration of subcontractors adopting prefabrication?
I mean, I haven't been here too long, so it's hard for me to say over like a long period of time, but yes, I would definitely say this a lot. People are finding I think a lot of it's that, or people were kind of starting to get into it before, and they kind of say, all right, we need to like really figure out how to scale this and take the idea of prefab that we're kind of like just dipping our toes in with it and figure out how to take that kind of full bore and run with it.
Hmm. Do you, when you're talking to people, do you hear any people say like, all right, we're not there, but we have to figure this out because we're getting killed by people that are doing it, or just because they see it coming? Or
I don't think they, I haven't heard the we're getting killed, so we have to, but I mean, pretty much everything, but so a lot of like people that are just starting to get into it, and they don't really have a process down or a standard workflow down. That's, we've seen a lot of that, I think, where people have prefab and want to do prefab. Either they want to learn how to do it better, or they want to take the, hate to call it half-assed operation, but they're.
How about this? Somebody that like historically has been doing stuff on Excel or whatever, and now they're like, all right, we're just hodgepodging things together. Like, let's get Procore, or let's get, you know, is it
one of those? There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of everything, to be honest. I don't think I can lend more to either way, but yeah, there's people that have, that's kind of where like Gallagher was at, where they had a prefab shop and they had a solid system, but a lot of people are just using Procore and they're missing out on a lot of data analytics and refining that process. Maybe the final 25% or 10%. We also have people that only do the first kind of 10% and they need to figure out the rest of the like 90% of the operation, I guess. Mm. So it's kind of across that whole spectrum.
Okay.
The other thing too, I just wanted to, I don't have anything attached to it now, but we have a calendar view that shows you stuff by date, but I don't have my BIM 360 tied into Manufacton right now, but you can view a whole Revit model and see the whole color coded model based off every stage everything's in.
Brian gets into a little more demoing here, and now we're going to transition into how a CM, GC can use Manufacton to view where the product is in the pipeline as far as subcontractors and suppliers go.
And you can allow for a specific project a GC to have a certain level of viewership of when stuff's coming to the shop. They don't get to see everything of what you're doing and when you're doing it, but they can kind of see what's scheduled to come to shop when. So you always know what's scheduled and everybody's on the same page with it.
So will GCs be connected to subcontractor shops to make sure they're on schedule? You ever see that?
Yeah, that's part of our kind of GC functionality. They're not connected to the shop. They just have like a more basic view of that supply chain manager, where they can see all of their, they can see like 10 subcontractors of on-site date. And I think it's, I want to say it's sorry, I don't have any projects up with the GCs, and I think it's just on-site date that they can see. So everybody knows either when it has to be manufactured by on-site. You don't want to see, they don't need to see a productivity data. They don't need to see what percentage done it is. Everybody needs to be on the same page of when it's showing up and when it needs to be made by.
Okay. So that GC gets a modified dashboard to just get a sense on where they're.
Yeah. You don't want them to know kind of, I mean, not that you don't want them to know, but you want to have your own kind of privacy within Manufacton as well.
All right. No, that's excellent. I love it. And then I just saw somebody scroll through there that Factory OS. Why do I know them? They're modular.
They are modular. Yeah.
Yeah. They're one of the bigger players, aren't they?
Yeah. They're, they have a pretty advanced operation. So they're not ones that I work with too in depth with right now. All right. So, this is pretty cool. So you can see the productivity of your whole shop. So, I mean, these are all percent complete. So you can see average number, like on a daily basis, you can see what percentage of all those runs are complete for each order, how many of the orders are actually complete. You can see actual versus budgeted hours for your entire shop for a week or a set of days. You can like split up by like location to see how each location is doing on a, like a daily or hourly basis. You can monitor, yeah, like if you know one station's falling behind, you can see, all right, maybe this is 90% complete and they're over there, they're budgeted out, or maybe they're 50% complete on this item and you know that they are 50% or 90% done. You say, all right, why is their actual already over their budgeted or something like that? So you can get all these like super advanced analytics and filter it down by station and see, kind of stack them all up against each other. If this is just a super simple version of it, but like even to filter by workstation, you can say like, you can filter this to view like the current day, every single day, it refreshes every hour, but every day it would tell you, this one's got a little better visual. You'd say, all right, maybe it's 2:30 and you end at 3 and you're 90% done with your orders for today, or how many runs do you have left that aren't complete? How are you looking hourly for that week?
Yeah. And I like how it's showing budgeted versus actual. And then you, is that a way to find out which runs are, you know, essentially making you money, which ones are losing money?
Yeah, you can filter it. Like say you filtered out all your, like, you could filter it down to like literally anything. So by name, so anything that has like a box name in it, you can search, or if you have a standard naming convention, anything that has like electrical box in it, you can filter, see all those orders either by day, by week, by your entire historical operation, and see how those, what the hours are for that, where you're running over. You can track like errors, and it's crazy the amount of stuff that you can do in here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, this reminds me. So I was just on somebody else's podcast. It's a it's called Live Cost. They're out of the UK. They do a lot in Europe and Australia, New Zealand. But they basically are a plugin for accounting softwares as a way to track the job, just to find out where you're making money and where you're not making money. Because, you know, a lot of this small, medium-sized contractor will know whether they made money or lost money on a job, but they won't know where. The Live Cost enables them to find out, like, okay, you're losing money on the drywall, you're making money on the framing, and they're also tracking all the costs for materials. So they're like, oh, hey, you keep pricing it at $30 a sheet for plywood, but it's been coming in at 38 on every job. And so you start to know, hey, you're estimating this, but you're losing money here, you're making money there. And they've been finding that the companies they're working with start to say, like, oh, wow, we're doing this, but we always, that's a piece that we always lose money on. So let's subcontract that out, or let's adjust this. So I see a similarity where you could actually say, hey, this production run in prefab is losing us money, this production run is making us money. Rather than just going, hey, on that job, we made money. But why'd you make money? Well, you made it really on these runs. That's where all your money makers were. And this run was a problem.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely the goal. I didn't think about it the other way, too, of thinking about what, I mean, I always kind of thought of like what can't you prefab, and filtering it down to that. But to look out, subbing out the prefab, too, because I've seen more and more companies like that where they are a subcontractor exclusively for like a trades prefab. Less and less in this area, just because I think that's a lot of union lines you get across, but I have seen a little bit of that as well.
So explain that again. How would that work?
So I think they would just have an electrical prefab shop, and that's all they do is they prefab electrical stuff, and an electric company may sub out if they have something super repeatable. They'd sub it out to this company and they'd build all that and ship to the site for them.
So I need 20 quad metal boxes with 25 foot whips coming off of them, and they pump them out.
Yeah. Something similar to that, I think.
Wow. That's genius.
And then, I mean, as long as you're making money off, as long as it's one of the items that you are.
Yeah. But I bet that sub is getting so good at the prefabrication.
Yeah. Right? They're going to have to.
Yeah. It would be like if this sounds kind of silly, but like, cause it's been so long, but you know, it would be like if you were building a light fixture yourself. And you could buy it from somebody, right? Like, why wouldn't you just buy it, right? So why can't a quad with four receptacles and a white faceplate with a 25-foot, shouldn't that be ordered like a light fixture?
Exactly, especially if you're going to take 2 days doing it. Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
That's, yeah, 100%. So that's, but yeah, I guess that kind of varies geographically based off the some of the union rules, but also like, that kind of puts the actual subcontractor in kind of a tough spot. Like, they can do it cheaper, but why can they do it cheaper too? You know what I mean? Like, why can't we get there? So I think that's I don't know how I feel about that end of it, but does that?
Yeah. Say that again. I was writing it down. I was making a different note because I want to look up some subs that do that. But you're saying like, okay, if that shop is doing it cheaper, why are they doing it cheaper than you?
Yeah, exactly. Is it just timing? We just need to take it on the chin for the first job or so and get the process down, or like where's that line of actually like having subbing it out and be part of your process, or maybe either do it for now and try to figure out, or just do it now yourself and maybe not take a loss, but you may not make as much as you would normally, but you'll down the line you make a lot more kind of.
Well, I would say probably because the subs are not built to be manufacturers,
but
they're becoming it, right?
Yeah.
But if there was the sub that is like, hey, I am never going to go out to site, I'm never going to do layout, I'm never going to be hired by a GC, that's all I'm going to do, right?
Yeah.
They've got an advantage over somebody who has to do all of that.
Yeah, I guess it's a lot less risk.
Right?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
And they, yeah, that's the best part of this conversation so far. Now I'm really going to like try
it. I know. After like learning about it, it's such a fat gray line that like, when do you cross it? How do you cross it? Like, what does that look like? It's, I don't know. It's,
and like,
what is,
I think that's a real question. Like, what's the difference between a light fixture and a gang box and a box with a whip on it? Like, locally, a lot of building officials are requiring the UL stamp on the assemblies. Have you bumped up against that at all?
No, I mean, a lot of the subs that are looking to kind of take the prefab to the next level, I think that's kind of the initial steps of, especially East Coast, West Coast, they have that process down. And then other than that, I don't think it's quite as strong of a.
So what was happening was some building officials, right? Because all your products need to be tested and need to be UL classified or some testing lab classification on them. So if you have a box in the field and a whip, all those components are individually tested.
Yeah.
Right. But the building official, in this case, electrical officials in a certain municipality, we're saying those aren't components anymore. That is like, go back to the thing. This isn't why I thought of it, but that is like a light fixture. When you get a light fixture, that fixture has a stamp on it, that fixture had been tested. So there have been electrical inspectors that are saying, when that comes out, I want to see a UL testing on that assembly, not just that all the components.
Yeah. That, I mean,
it's rare, but it happened in a major city, and that really threw a monkey wrench into folks. And now some of those companies are getting all their stuff to get a UL label on them.
Well, I mean, I guess you could kind of parallel, like if you're making like a lamp or something like that, if you're making the lamp in pieces and bringing it to the site, just setting it up, whatever, you'd have to test what, like the light bulb and the socket and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
But if you make it all in a shop and you have an outlet there with power to it, then you're testing each one of those, and you kind of prefab your testing process, I guess. So like if you have a power outlet right next to you and you build the whole lamp there, all you gotta do is plug it in. Not only can the guy testing and see that, but maybe he gets to see kind of how it's made and see your whole process and buys you a little more trust with them as well.
Yes. And it's just, this is just really pushing construction companies that are doing prefabrication to really be more like manufacturers.
Right? That's the whole, yeah, that's it. Like even when our CEO Raghi, when he always talks about like prefab and stuff like that, it's all, whether it's like subs prefabbing stuff or people just offsite construction, he loves the term industrialized construction. And that industrialized construction, I think, is getting very, his idea, very close to the manufacturing process in a exclusively beneficial way as possible.
Mm. Awesome. Well, this is going to be, this will be entertaining to see how it all plays out. I'm definitely, we're going to get off and I am going to go look for those companies that are supplying prefabricated.
I haven't
seen new subcontractors.
Yeah.
Do you know it's any something names? I know it's not local, but. Or could you send me one? Could you find one?
And just let me just write it down and I'll look it up after. It's cool. I don't know. That's like the, I mean, this meeting in general, like, and learning that stuff's like the fun part of the job where, I mean, I'm sure, you know, like the rest of it, you get so sucked into it that you kind of want to take a deep breath, but and step away after a long day at work. But that it's conversations like these and kind of thinking about stuff like that gets you excited. That was going to be my only question for you, is that like, where does that come from for you? The energy and the time and the passion to put the podcast on, to produce it and to set that up, as well as kind of to do that, you have to spend a lot of time, I'm sure, researching the people and the methods and the, like, you, I know you've been talking a lot about new like safety stuff and new coding changes lately and stuff like that. Like, that's going to take a ton of time and energy.
Yeah. Like if people knew the amount of time I spent on the podcast, they would think that I am a fucking fool. But
there's such a wide range that you talk about, though. Like, that's, yeah.
It does help my business, right? So it's not completely like a waste, for lack of a better word. But
yeah,
it really stems from, I was just a podcast junkie, and I was looking, like, the amount of stuff that I've been able to learn about health, food, marketing, like business, like, I've been able to listen and learn about so many things. And I love construction. And I wanted to be able to listen to something that could teach me about construction, like I was able to learn about food and regenerative agriculture and how intermittent fasting works. And like, there's just amazing fucking information out there.
Oh, yeah.
That if you want to learn about anything, you can, right? But when it went to like commercial construction, there's just nothing there. So I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to do it. And then
that's awesome.
You know, and when it's all started working out, it just got better, because not only do I get to learn, like, I'm listening to someone, like, if somebody else was doing exactly what I'm doing, I'd be thrilled to listen. Right.
Yeah.
But it's that 10X, because I get to be the person sitting there and asking somebody who's an expert the questions I want to ask them.
Oh, that's cool.
So, you know, to sit down with Matt Consigli and, you know, ask him why he does something, or Mike Fish, why he thinks about some way, or Mike Fallon about how do you analyze a real estate deal when you're going to buy a piece of property, or why did you go to North Carolina when you guys have always built and bought? Like, I want to know that, you know, like, it's just information that I think is like, I've been able to get better at so many things, from mental health to food to marketing, whatever, by learning. I'm like, I want to do that same thing for construction. And it's fun, right? The amount of people that have reached out and I've got to meet from, you know,
yeah, that's awesome,
from all over the place has been great. So it's very selfish to some degree, because it's just stuff that I want to learn
in the best possible way.
Yeah. And, you know, the more people that benefit, the better. And then people just send me shit now, right? So that saves me research, right? There'll just be people that say, hey, have you seen this? Or did you see this happen? Or did you, like, awesome.
Just opens so many doors to learning, like, more about everything construction related, right?
Yeah. And these are people that are experts. Like, so when Mike Procopio told me about, like, the cost of lumber, I was able to go look and be like, over a year, it's gone up 200%, you know? And then I talked about that, and now I've got a guy, he's an estimator in, there was one estimator in New York and one estimator in North Carolina that are sending me, you know, they're sending me wood data, you know, like, hey, this is the prices we're seeing from subcontractors coming in, and a local framing company is sending me stuff. And I'm just like, this is amazing.
And that's awesome.
Like, this isn't, this doesn't help me with business, but this is just like, like this example is access to information, right? I had a guy that I used to work with, and we were good friends while he was up here. I lost touch, but I still would consider him a friend. If he, you know, if I was to see him, I'd be glad to see him. He just got a new job, and this was about 6 or 8 months ago. He got a new job in North Carolina. He had asked me to be a reference for him, so I was. And then he was trying to make like a good impression, and they do podium construction. And he's like, hey, I'm trying to, I forget what exact information he needed on podium, but I knew that that estimator in North Carolina did that type of work. So I remember sending to him, I said, yeah, I'm trying to find out, I think it was square foot costs on podium construction. So I sent a message to the guy from North Carolina who had asked me a bunch of things, right? And I said, hey, I'm like, I got a buddy down there, and he was wondering square foot. And he sent me like either 3 or 5 estimates, recent estimates he's done with all the information, and like didn't even strip off like company names. I mean, just gave everything. And I'm like, do you want me to like blank that out? He's like, no, it's fine. Right. So I'm like, just to have that access to that information is just like that alone, even though that's technically not worth something to me, I didn't, but like, that's valuable. That's been it. And it's just, it's fun and it's fascinating. And like, I really think like you have to be ahead, not necessarily ahead of the curve, but like, if you're not just constantly changing, you're going to be left behind. And it's been that way forever, but it's accelerating. Right? It's exponential. So it's just going to happen so rapid that companies have been able to be like, well, I can just kind of slowly adapt as I need to. And they've been able to survive. I don't think you're going to be able to do that anymore. And I'm looking at new methods of podcasting right now, even, right? Even though kind of podcasting is still early, I'm seeing that a lot of people are kind of rushing in. So I'm already looking about how do I take what I'm doing to a different place that is kind of more ahead of the curve, right?
Do you track like the data of the amount of people that listen to your podcast?
Yeah.
Have you seen that go significantly up or?
Yeah, it's a slow climb, but it's pretty
consistent. starting to come up more. Or do you
it
think
hasn't
that's...
done like. The hockey stick kind of thing yet. But if you look at it, it's more of like a linear trend. I should go this way because that's where you'd be looking at it, right? Linear trend going upwards like that, which I think is good. And I think podcast is a patience game, and it's a grind. And it's amazing how many, like, I think people just don't understand the amount of emails and DMs I get from people that just want to come in. Oh, like, oh, hey, do you want to talk to the CEO of this? I'm like, no. And because I don't want to talk to someone just because they're a CEO. Like if you
it's,
were telling
it's gonna me, be it's gonna yeah. be something that motivates you and something behind that. Like
yeah, like I want to talk to Matt Consigli because the way they took a company from 1 million to 1.6 billion, I found really interesting. Like they were just all about client satisfaction. Like, I don't care. In the beginning, they were like, I don't care if we lose money. Make sure when we're done with this, everybody that worked for us is recommending us to someone else. Like, that I find interesting. Mike Fish, he's been on twice, talk about him all the time. But the amount of investment he's willing to make into culture and learning and development.
Big one lately, right? The whole kind of redevelopment, right?
Yeah.
New branding.
Yep. And they went from, I think, 40 million to 400 million in a blink. Why do you think spending that much money on educating people, like multiple employees, their whole job is learning and development. How do we make our people better? What there's people going into 2-day classes on how to be better public speakers with like phenomenal teachers, not just like, so.
Do you ever see yourself getting to that? Sorry, let me finish.
No. So like, why does someone like that say, okay, I'm going to spend $15,000 to send these 6 people. Some of them are probably an assistant super, so they can be better at public speaking, or have a book club where if you work there, you can buy any, they will pay for any book you want. Just as long as it's about kind of being better. And it could be about being a better parent or a better gardener or better at accounting. As long as it's about making you better, they'll buy your book. You know, everybody that works there, Headspace app for free, corporate membership. So if you want to get into mindfulness and be a better person that way, health coaches, like to spend money on people's, you know, physical health, mental health, education, like so heavily, you know, just 2 people alone, even if you factor in all their benefits and 401ks, that's at least $250,000 in their salary, right?
If not, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Plus all the vendors they're paying for, that could be $500,000 a year to educate their people. Why are you doing that? And
yeah,
why isn't anybody else doing that? And you've gone from 40 to 400. Something's working.
Yeah, right? That's cool.
So I want to like talk to those people, but continuing to find those things is a challenge, and you have to be like constantly careful.
I'm sure. I mean, is it finding them or like filtering them? That's the hard part. You said you get so much stuff, but do you take any of those? Like, I mean, you gave me the time of day, which is awesome, but do you just seek out your own people, or does that like, do you just try to filter out what comes in?
Both. And I think one thing, I gave a talk on it for the Industrialized Wood Building Conference. It's like this annual conference, and a lot of industrialized wood is really mass timber, but yeah. Their group would cover like OSB and just general manufactured wood. But the handy thing is code, both building code and zoning code, I find can be very predictive about where the industry is going. So for instance, I won't go into too much, but it's been talked a lot, but you look at the 2021 IBC, which got adopted last year, now allows you to build up to 18 stories out of mass timber, right? The addition before that was the first addition. So the 8th addition, as far as Massachusetts went, which was the 2009 yeah. IBC, you could not build with mass timber. It was nowhere in the code. You needed to go to use a chapter, you know, 104 alternative means and methods request. You'd have to go to the State Board of Appeals. 2015 edition of the IBC recognized it as a material, and you could build essentially 4 stories out of it. And now the 2021 is saying you can build a high rise out of it. There is enough interest from manufacturers, builders, code officials that 3 years ago I started talking about mass timber, right? Because you kind of see that. Also in the 2021 is shipping containers are an allowed building material now. So you can now build buildings out of shipping gear. But what does that tell you? That tells you modular, right? Okay. So modular is going to be real. And you start to see the Kateras and the Skenders and the, what is it? Factory OS or whatever, right? Okay. You're seeing those happen. You see code changes happening. You see the tiny homes. So from a zoning thing, you see them now allowing smaller square footages than what would have been code compliant before. So that tells you, like, that gives you a theme of where things are going. So those are the people that I want to talk to. And that's why I want to talk to somebody like you, like what's happening on manufacturing, and less about what your software can do. I want to know that, but I want to know that because it's an indicator of where the industry is going.
Right? All right. perfect, because I don't mean to cut you off, but I didn't want to come across like I'm like I said before, like salesy. It's, for me, it was really cool. That guy that I spoke of before, Jason Barber, our VP Industry Solution, he's been on, like, I always listen to podcasts about a ton of stuff. And then it was kind of like, why not? I mean, it's not why not work, but like, why not stuff that I'm dealing with on a daily basis? So I listened to his on his Bridging the Gap podcast a while ago. And then I saw yours on LinkedIn. I'm like, oh, it was either on LinkedIn or I just searched for like construction podcasts or something like that. And yours popped up and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. It was cool to have the connection to you. You were able to help us out with one or two of the MCA projects a few years ago, which was cool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it paid off. We did pretty well both years. So I appreciate that.
Yep.
But it was cool to see that, like, oh, I know Joe Kelly, like I know who that is. So it's cool to see that. And then you start seeing names of companies that you've worked with or people that you've heard of and kind of, I don't know, motivates you to pay more attention to it in your area. And like you said, do it more as a passion rather than just kind of a job. It was fun to see. So for me, it's the kind of the goal of reaching out would be to kind of have like the people I work with be in that setting of something that's been cool and familiar to me and something I'm hoping to impact in terms of our local construction industry. But I didn't want to necessarily come across like it was 100% just like about Manufacton on itself. Like our leadership team is pretty cool that way, where it's like Bob did one a couple weeks ago, like I said, with FMI and Brian Potter, but Ragi Iyengar, the CEO, he's done a ton of stuff on industrialized construction, modular building, and it's cool to at least try to pursue the opportunity of kind of meshing both of those together with our actual product and company side of the fact, I guess.
Yeah, and to go back to like, what's the point of doing all this? Everything what I said is true, but also, again, going back to the things are changing very rapidly and I want to know what those are so I can put my business in the right space, right? To be there to understand that. So that's part of it. And talking to people like you, that's why in the beginning I'm asking, okay, why?
Oh, I appreciate that. That's something that nobody's really asked me, that it's cool to have that interest or
be able to express that. You're seeing the same thing, right? And just you're seeing that shift happening and you're saying, okay, why not be part of that shift?
Yeah, why not be part of it? Or why not try to be ahead of it? That, you know what I mean? And I think it's my position at Gallagher was such a blessing where I didn't know if I, like, it wasn't a field superintendent role right away. And I'm like, why would I take it? What's a fab shop? What am I doing here? And then talking to a few people, it would be cool insight into something different in construction. So I said, sure. And then I think I'm very fortunate to be able to have that experience so early on. I'm very thankful to the guys at Gallagher and Sean and Mike and Brian to give me that opportunity. But it's something that a lot of people at my age and that are very early in their career don't see. So it's cool to be able to express that. And I don't know, hopefully other people are given the same types of opportunities to kind of make the same type of impact or have the same, I don't know, be able to express your passion for construction and stuff, but do something differently than kind of breaks the mold a little bit.
Yeah. I have super strong feelings on like career path stuff, and more people should be thinking like you're thinking, right? Like me, every job should be something that gives you more options.
If you don't know what those options are.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't have to, right? But you're like, okay, I took this co-op, which gave me exposure to prefabrication. It also gave me exposure to mechanical systems, which I wouldn't have got. So I could take a subcontractor route. I could take a tech route, or I have my schooling in construction management. I mean, I want to go the tech route and software route and prefab and modular route. But I need the experience to be good at that. So I'm going to take that, which gets me the skills so I can be well-rounded when I'm going here. And now you go to Manufacton, and even if Manufacton goes belly up tomorrow because the CEO's stealing all the money, you would be in high demand to go to some company that wants to implement prefabrication or modular on their company.
That's my hope is, I mean, I think having the right mindset and at least knowing the basics of what it takes to operate in the field is important too. But also, I don't be as hesitant as I was to make that jump initially, even like out of school. Like there is, I'm only going to get so much out of working 2 years in the field from jumping to manufacturing. And it's low level stuff, but it's important to somebody that knows nothing. So there is an exponential amount of learning that I've done in that short amount of time, but it's also not enough to like make or break a position or a career, I don't feel like. So, I mean, to even encourage people to make those leaps even before, don't feel like you're kind of locked into that linear path, that it's kind of cool to take those leaps.
Yeah. And even like, don't weigh so heavily on finance. I see people like make decisions where this company's, especially early, right, where $5,000 or $10,000 seems like a lot of money. I was working for CM, doing well. I went to work for the city, making less than half of what I was making before, but it was the opportunity to learn an entirely new side of the business, understand all the code side of things, understand how to get a permit in the city of Boston, which is, I'm like, okay, that's valuable to know, right?
To know the people too, I'm sure.
Yeah, to meet all the people, right? Right. So yeah. Like you learn the process, learn the people, learn the zoning code. No one knows the zoning code. You know, it's like, there's some really like narrow experts, but most architects don't even know it, right? There's just certain ones that do. So like to understand the zoning code, to start to really learn the building code, to learn the processes, to meet the people, that enabled me to have this job today that I have. So someone and lots of people did look at it and tell me, I had the person that I, when I gave my notice to say I was leaving, they called me stupid. They're like, that's stupid.
I was told similar things. So I get it.
So, and I was like, okay, you know, like I'm not looking for your approval, you know, I'm doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So yeah, it's, I find the creator decision stuff fascinating. I almost want to do a podcast on like how I think about it, but I just enjoy that, just the chess aspect of it, right? Like how you're kind of planning all that out and how you're trying to think multiple steps ahead and not just playing checkers like, oh, hey, I'm going to jump this and I'm going to get this. I'm going to take this move and I'm going to make more money, or I'm going to like, okay, that's fine. It's going to make you more money, but what does that do for you the next three moves down the line, right? Or
yeah. I mean, I don't want to give myself too much credit because it was a lot of it was the position that I was put in. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there is ways you can go about kind of, I guess, playing chess through that path. But I think it's either that or just kind of just broadening your scope. Like you can be playing chess or checkers, but you don't have to go on this direct path. You can go this way or like there's certain ways to go. Like, I don't think people even know to look. Like I would have no idea about any of this stuff if I wasn't given the opportunity or at least exposed to it and understanding that there is a lot of benefits to it. Not just that, even just knowing about it, knowing of it. Yeah, I don't know. Just so broad spectrum that people, especially in school specifically for it, aren't really exposed to a ton.
Yeah, well, you were smart, like going into the mechanical club or whatever the heck they called it, right? Where,
yeah,
right? That just gets you a broader exposure, right? Because that's what I think it's all about. Like what gives you the most options? And
I always thought mechanical systems, I mean, I still don't know a ton about it now just because I've been jumping all over. I did a lot of structure and concrete for JMA, but that was in school. That was my thought process, is work for a trade, work for a GC. So I was with, when I was with Consigli, it was on a closeout job. So it wasn't a ton going on there. So I wanted to give that another shot. So that's why I went with JMA, but it was kind of with a trade contractor if I got better field experience the first time, my third was going to be electrical, because a lot of people initially don't care about this. Like it's focused, it's more GC focused, but electrical is, I think, something that people know the least about in the field, followed by mechanical. I was more drawn to mechanical just because I thought the way it works is a little bit cooler, but that's what kind of brought me in there. And I think that was fun for me to explore different mechanical systems. And I can't go into too much detail anymore just because I haven't focused on them a ton, but even just being able to work on. Like now I know like so much more about wastewater treatment plants or VRF systems for the project I did at Wentworth. But having that different exposure to different stuff and being able to take those chances was fun for me.
Hey, MassCons, hope you enjoyed that one. If you'd be kind enough, if you could like, share, write a review, any of those type of things, give us 5 stars, give us 2 stars, whatever. But either way, that stuff really keeps me motivated when I'm trying out new things and spending a lot of time on editing and, you know, playing with different things to see what's the best project I can get. And it really helps when I get emails and feedback from folks that listen. Take care.